Joe, you love a lot, but somebody might have been absent. I don't miss anybody. Tom Iverson, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the primary purpose group in Southern Pines, North Carolina. I'm a member, not a visitor. That's where I work. That's where I do my most important work. And delighted to be here. I want to give a gift that keeps giving. And I'm not really a party time guy. What I found is that the most rewarding, enjoyable thing I do in Alcoholics Anonymous is watch hopeless cases get hope. And so that's what the heart and soul of this thing's all about. And I think that the gift, let me tell you what the background is of. I was over a while back in the hospital over in my area, and we do a little deep, we did a little short program with the new arrivals or recent departees or whatever, but they're brand new folk. And we go over just sort of introduce to the program and make sure they know that they're welcome and that they're in our place and they're in our home group, they're near home. And so we want to get that across to them. And I went over there one morning, not too long ago, and they had no alcoholics. In a detox, but no alcoholic. And so I went over to the nursing crew and I said, what the hell have we done here? Cured alcoholism in this county? And she said, no, I don't think so. And I said, well, where are the folks? And she said, I swear to God, I don't know. And the director of the behavioral unit, the kind of a new term for the bug house, the behavioral unit takes in anybody that ain't acting right. For whatever reason, and we tend to fit into that category when we work in the detox situation. And so I hadn't met this lady that was the manager of the behavioral section. So I posed the same question to her. I said, tell me what on earth is going on here? There's no patients in detox, and that's just unbelievable. And I said, what's the problem? And she said, well, it's money. And I said, oh, so, you mean somebody comes here and they don't have funds, they can't get in? She said, I'm sorry to tell you, but that's exactly right. If they come here and they don't have finances or insurance coverage, we have to turn them around and tell them we can't take them, no room at the inn. I said, well, it's kind of a simple question. What happens to them if they can't get in? And she said, and she's the manager of behavioral services, she said, you know, I really don't know. And she said, I think what they do is come into the emergency room and they go to, I think they call the triage desk, you know, where they go in and sort you out to see what you are. And she said, they come into the triage desk and if they say they want to go to detox, the first question is, do you have insurance or do you have funds? And the answer is no. The triage nurse says, I'm sorry, we can't take them. And I said, well, what happens to them then? And she said, I really don't know. Now, it would be real easy for me to draw up in arrogant pride and indignation that the director of the behavioral unit doesn't know what happens to patients. I'm the oldest active member in my state. I'm the oldest active member, obviously, in that local area. And I didn't know either. And when alcoholics are hitting the wall, bouncing off, and don't know what to do, and a leader in the LDA program, and a leader in the medical service, don't even know what happened to them, something wrong with that picture. Something wrong. And so, well, we're trying to do something about that now. So what I want to give you as a gift is if you're interested in finding the things that light the rocket that we call sobriety. If you're interested in doing something like that and you haven't found it, let me invite you to do something. When you get back to your hometown, do what I did there. Not only that, but think about in your community, I don't care how small it is, if you'll have the same kind of thing, just reduced size. But think about in your community, what happens to alcoholics who hit the wall. You know what I'm talking about. You know, come to court, divorce, you know, where alcoholics hit the wall. and stand there mystified about to do on both sides of the table. He put that anyway. Put it in the church, any place where I place go when they're in trouble. Salvation Army, social services, to the ministry. If you're broke alcoholics, you're famous for going to ministries and for getting help. And so if when you look at your community, try to identify a place where alcoholics are hitting the wall and clueless about what to do. And the people who receive them are equally confounded about what to do. And so what I would suggest is that this kind of reaches back to the good old days in a way, a little different twist to it. But if you see that problem happening, ask yourself, or talk it over with your group, what do you think ought to happen? We're the first line of resistance in alcoholism. We're the first resource that's going to be available. We're one that will never charge money to be a member. So think about what happens to them. And if what's happening to them isn't the kind of thing that you'd like to see, then take a look at the 10th step in the book. Just take a quick read of that. The 10th step, where it moves us hunt for that this morning a little bit, that when we get through with all the raptures of the promises, it says now our task is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And that's exactly what I'm giving you as a gift. I want to put that responsibility on you. Obviously, you don't have to take it. But if you're concerned about fellow alcoholics, take a look at your community. You won't have to look far. I guarantee you, you'll see alcoholics hitting the wall and lost this to be.
I don't quite understand. What are we supposed
to do? Then when you figure out what you think ought to happen, make it happen. Make it happen. Your ideas are a dime a dozen. God knows. You get all the ideas you want. Most everybody's got an idea of what they want me to do. But if you've got an idea, put that sucker in motion. And you can really make a difference. You know? Not only in having the doorway of hope open to alcoholics in that community, but it opened up a whole new portal in your life. You have to have that kind of substantial impact on that. So that's my gift. My gift is go to work, sniff them out, and go get them.
Wow. Oh, you're going to let me use it? Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sandy.
And I'm really honored to be up here and to be with everybody in this room. I wasn't sure what I was going to talk about tonight, but my anniversary's coming up in a few days, and a lot of times when your anniversary's coming up, you kind of reflect back on things. And so I gave some thought to what my 46th year of sobriety was like and how I would evaluate it. And this is what I received this year. I received almost 500 cards from AA people. I received so many prayers that I can't count them. I found out that I was loved way beyond what I thought. Then I found out that God loves me more than I ever dreamed he did. I had no idea the power of a loving God to lift a human being up and carry them over anything. And the third, speaking of gifts that Tom was, that I got, was I found out how much I love God. It's unbelievable. I had no idea my heart was that big. I had no idea that it's hard to express it. So if I look at those spiritual values and gifts, it's pretty easy for me to calculate that the 46th year was the best year of sobriety I've ever had. And That's because, yet in this program, we measure things differently. We don't measure anything by money or prestige or any of those things, or whether things go your way. There's one measurement, and I'd like to talk about that measurement. And it's getting closer to your own higher power. That's the measurement. And it's the only one that counts. I've tried a lot of other measurements. How do you measure this or that? And that's the one that I think is the most crucial. And in our personal programs, there's a verb that is in our steps, and I think it's the most, one of the key verbs, and it's called seek. Seek. Sought through prayer and meditation. God couldn't would if he were sought. So seeking becomes a secret weapon. And that is an individual endeavor. And it's contained in our 11th step. That's where we part company. That's where we go out on our own. And we either seek or we don't. We can do a lot of other things, and they're crucial. But this is what maintains the spiritual condition, is the constant seeking. And so a lot of times we do it under duress. I don't know about you all, but that brings God into people's lives like nothing else I've ever seen. But there's no reason to not seek equally as hard on your own. And so if you're getting started in this spiritual program, I urge you to take that verb into your life and become a seeker. Your adventure will be totally different from mine and Tom's and Clancy's. You may wander into a New Age bookstore and pick up some author that transforms the way you look at the steps. It's your choice. And both our big book and the 12 and 12. Our libraries are full of books. There's teachers out there, ministers. There's all kinds of wonderful resources to enhance the way the AA literature looks to you. You just keep transforming it and seeing in depth how brilliant the writing was of our literature. It's just remarkable. And so we're taught to keep or maintain our spiritual condition. And from there, we can go out and extend limitless amounts of energy, because it's not just our energy. It's coming from our higher power as well. And that's really a secret to how these two in particular. I'm much younger than they are. Well, yeah, I guess. Wow, I can hardly, not much, but some. And I can't keep up with them. I know their schedules, and I know what they do. And so I know they're tapped in to this spiritual energy, and it runs through their hearts, and it goes out to everybody that they touch. And the point I want to bring up now is that, and I got this from a letter that Carl Jung wrote back to Bill Wilson, where he talked about Roland Hazard, and he was glad to hear about AA and all these things. And then as in passing, he made a comment about the human race. And he said, I've been studying people, us, for 80 years or so, and I've watched them as they struggle against evil. And we'd call it character defects. And this was what he said. And they always lose. They always cave in to their own desires. Always. And then he said, except those that have had a spiritual awakening and belong to a society that helps them maintain it. Does that sound like AA? Isn't that something? So the spiritual condition of the person and the society is paramount to maintain. In other words, if your group isn't supporting you in a spiritual nature, you're not getting the full deal that is required. We really need to maintain this. And so I was looking for where we might find guidance on how to maintain the spiritual condition of our society. And there's a whole book about it. I bet a lot of you didn't even know it. It's called The Service Manual. And I brought one. And I'm going to read one of the last sentences in it. You'll never guess that it's here. Freedom under God to grow in his likeness and image will ever be the quest of Alcoholics Anonymous. To a man, we of AA believe that our freedom to serve is truly the freedom by which we live, the freedom in which we have our being. So this is a very technical book, but it's filled with spiritual wisdom. And it's something that if you're concerned about preserving your spiritual society, the instructions are in here, and it's very clear. There's a great deal of detail about how to elect people and what the terms are in our three corporations, but there's also how to maintain our spiritual condition as a society. And I'm just going to take 3 or 4 minutes to review something that happened in 1950 and 55. In 1950, Dr. Bob died, and then Bill suddenly realized, I'm not going to be around forever. Who's going to be in charge when the two founders are gone? How are we going to make sure that this fellowship stays spiritual and that egos don't take over and get us off in a million different directions? How are we going to do that? This book laid out the most brilliant solution, and it established the two, the trustee side and the delegate side, and eventually Bill had to decide who specifically is he going to turn this over to. And he turned it over to Tradition 2. There will be one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. And Tradition 2 is mentioned all the way through this book. When in doubt, go back to that. That is the authority that the groups, the individual members, through their representatives, bring up to the top. And I just think it's brilliant that it was laid out so that the spiritual condition can be maintained. Now, it's been 55 years since that happened. It happened in 1955. In 51, they started trying it out. And then when they got to 55, Bill was satisfied that he had set it up so that there would never be a power at the top that dominated, etc., that we would always come back to this. So we ended up with two powerful forces, unity. And that we all know how important that is. You get the big resentments in the middle of a group, and you have a lot of problems going on. So unity. But what are you going to unify around? What's the center of that unity? This faction over here, that faction over there? It's right in Tradition 2. We unify around one ultimate authority. There's the authority. So we can't even question it. That's the top authority. And it is expressed as it comes up through our hearts all the way up to control the spirituality of society. So I think after 55 years, it might be time for an inventory. What does the spiritual condition look like? How could we measure it? God, that could be complicated. It would probably be about 25 rules we'd have to come up with in order to take a look at this. And then I think about Chuck Chamberlain. And everybody's been talking about Chuck. And how he reduced everything down to the simplest forms. Spirituality is simplicity. It's getting rid of everything that isn't the essence and then focusing on that. And when he came out with that statement that there's only one problem that can ever exist, and that is conscious separation from God, and there's only one solution to everything, and that's conscious contact with God, we have a barometer. We have a measuring device. When I was flying and all the other fancy equipment went out, we had the magnetic compass left. And if you knew where north was and you had a map, you were cool. You could figure almost everything out. So we need a north to guide this AA ship. And north is God. And the big book is the map. And if you have those two things, you cannot get lost. And the ship can't go off into the wrong waters. So we might just sit back, look at your group. Is it going towards God or away from God? Look at your district. Are they going towards God or away from God? Look at your area. Look at the General Service Conference. Look at the grapevine. Look at the pamphlets. Look at everything you can. And then you decide. Are we on course or do we need to correct? I don't think it's complicated. That's why simplicity is beautiful. Going towards God or away. Thank you.
My name is Clancy Immislund, and I'm an alcoholic. And although not in sobriety and age, I'm the eldest of all the folks up here. And I can't remember what they said. Not really. Two very fine talks. I must admit, I was going to choke up a little bit when I started, but then Sandy beat me to it, so I can't do that. That always gets the crowd on your side. I don't mean to poo-poo it. I mean, I've been a good friend of Sandy for 40 years, and I just give him a little pinch now and then like I do to Mr. Roop. And Tom is an old warden, so I just treat him with respect. You'll never take me alive, screw. But I was listening to what has been said tonight, and it's certainly correct what Tom was saying. There's a lot of places where people are turned away with our illness. And I'm disturbed by it, but I don't know of any good answer for the obscure little town in northern Alabama that has a detox that charges for it, or a treatment center. And when I got sober, there were no treatment centers, there were no detoxes even. And we used to sit up with people in the night and give them Karo syrup and a little touch of drinks. You know, it's the funny thing when you stop thinking about it. In the early days of AA, 12-steppers always carried a pint of whiskey in their glove compartment because they were low-bottom drunks you were calling on, and they need a little drink to keep from going into convulsions. And it's so much different now. I am sometimes concerned about the direction of where we're going with God. As Sandy put it so well, I'm not at the level of spiritual awareness that he is. That's not my great ability. But Sandy has written a very excellent treatise on why are we getting away from God. I think it's just remarkable. He sent me a copy of it. It's beautiful. I suggest it might have just a tad too much religion in it, that he altered that a little bit, I think. Well, no, because, you know, spirituality is not religion. And if you start getting mixed up, you're going to lose somebody along the way. But my particular thought is, I work in a facility in Los Angeles, where we handle people who can't afford to go to detox, can't afford to go to treatment centers, and they're dying on the street. And I've been doing that for almost 40 years now. And you'd think it'd be terrible, but it's an amazing thing about life. I must have got a frog in my throat. Amazing thing about life, and it's something that you have to remember sometimes. Nothing is wonderful after you're used to it. The new car just becomes the car. The new house becomes the house. The new all-time 100% love becomes her. Or him, as the case may be. Not that that's bad, but that's natural. Wonderful. Very few people have been married very many years, and when you touch your lover's hand, there's no spark there anymore. But I remember when there was. And conversely, nothing is horrible after you're used to it. I see people die around me all the time, and sick, and alcoholics who need help badly. And we offer them help. Our facility is probably the only Skid Row mission in the world that's based on a 12-step basis. But that doesn't mean anything in itself, because the defenses are so strong. And so what we have to do is we try to incorporate them, we bring them in, we give them a place to live, and we put them in classes. We try to teach them how to live in the world, how to go to a store. Some of them don't even know how to do that. Some can't read or write. Some can't do anything. And it's not a matter of they're drinking too much. It's a matter that they're ill-equipped for life. They go to AA. We send them out to AA meetings all the time. We have AA meetings inside. We have a lot of narcotics addicts, cocaine addicts. They go out to CA meetings, the NA meetings. But the one thing that is most bothersome about the treatment of alcoholics is that the predominance of treatment centers today, who feel treatment consists of stuffing them full of antidepressants and putting them back on the street. And that's a terrible thing. I mean, they come out of there and they look like they're doing better. Yeah, I'm fine. Great. Could you tell me which way my car is? You know. And the new antidepressants are so strong and so intense. You look in the physician's reference guide for short-term use only, but they stay on them. And what happens, eventually, they go into worse depressions. Many people commit suicide, get very sick. But the therapy is we've lost somewhere along the line the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. Many years ago, I was committed to the Texas State Insane Asylum at Big Spring, Texas, where I got shock treatments, Miss Mildred, before they became in. I got by because I escaped. And they told me it was an escape-proof hospital, but I didn't believe it. But I found a way to get through a door, down a corridor, over the fence, and I was gone. But I don't know if you've ever been to West Texas. You suddenly realize they can see you running for 3 days. It's just a matter of time. Well, there goes that little Yankee son of a bitch now. Snatched me back and gave me a couple of months of electric shock treatments. But they tried to experiment when I was in that hospital. They experimented for the first time ever in the state of Texas, of all their state hospitals. They put in an experimental alcoholic ward. An old guy named Les Ross had been grinding him. A lot of these people are alcoholics. And so they put in a program in the state of Texas where your family could commit you. If you had a known alcoholic problem, they could commit you for 30 days. You had to go in there for 30 days to that ward. And Alcoholics Anonymous members would try to work with them. And I was in that hospital as a schizophrenic with paranoid tendencies or something. And so I was not in that ward. But I met that guy, and as I came off my shock treatments, I'd been slipping around AA for about 6 years by then. So I knew what he wanted to hear, and I told him what he wanted to hear. I said, I'm looking for sobriety on an all-time basis, Mr. Ross. And Do you have any sort of meetings or literature I could read? So I got transferred to the alcohol ward, and it was a wonderful ward. Besides, I had pre-knowledge that they didn't know I had either the best patient they ever had. I eventually got sent out to little towns around there, to Midland and Odessa, with attendants to give little talks to the AA groups and say things like, I'm very happy to be here tonight on behalf of my fellow patients and thank each and every one of you for bringing a message of hope to us in the hospital. It's as though we were going across a vast desert of alcoholism when we came to the tall green hills of sobriety, but they were too steep for our weary legs. But wonderful people such as you pointed out 12 golden stairs that we could climb one by one. And now as we reach near the top of this hill and prepare to return to our hope, friends throughout West Texas, and show them 12 golden steps, only because of the wonderful work you're doing, God bless you. And you can laugh, got me out of the Texas Nut House. And I never drank again till I ran out of Thorazine. But the point I was trying to make about that is that in West Texas, that Big Spring Hospital got to be famous. You'd go to Midland, half the people in the group came out of Les Ross's. They taught them AA in there. There was no specialist, no nothing, just AA and eat your meals and get your sleep. And God, West Texas was full of them. And then some years, when I went across the country, I used to always stop in at Midland on my way back, and a guy named Joe Clary, I'd stay with his over in the house overnight. In the morning, we'd go over to the Big Spring Hospital and I'd talk there, because nobody ever wanted to go back there and talk. I did. I don't want to tell them, I know how you feel, and there's a way out of this. And they suddenly realized, you know, Les Ross, that is, he died, and another guy followed him in there, and these men don't have certificates. How can they help alcoholics? So they pushed them out and brought in people with certificates, young people. The last time I went there to talk, they didn't even come to the meeting. They went in another room and loudly talked and laughed and played the radio. And they suddenly realized no one was staying sober out of these hospitals anymore. And then they all closed down. They're now in the same position they were in 1954. There's no treatment for an alcoholic in the state of Texas through the state. Because I don't know how we can convey it even. I don't know how to make an answer. I mean, the problems my two colleagues here discussed, I understand those problems. But how do you solve it? And we're moving away from God. It's a movement starting at the top in Alcoholics Anonymous. It sounds odd, but I'll tell you, it is. If you went to the International Convention, you saw one meeting end with the Lord's Prayer. In other words, they all had nice things to do, but there wasn't any Lord's Prayer. There's a movement away from God as though we're corny and old-fashioned by using God. And I don't know how they can even justify it. More and more meetings are starting to not say the Lord's Prayer. There's two meetings in the country of Australia that say the Lord's Prayer, and that's only because some people from here went down there. In Europe, nobody says the Lord's Prayer. And in this country, we're not saying the Lord's Prayer. And it gets back to things, well, how about our people who are not Christian? They're not Christian. We wouldn't want to offend them. Well, isn't that kind of ridiculous? I know my home group, which is the largest single weekly meeting in the world, I guess, about 1,000 people every Wednesday night. We meet in a synagogue. And I notice I sit in the back sometimes. I watch the rabbi comes in once in a while to go to a meeting, just see what's going on. He sits in the back row. And I know he's trying to think, how can I get this many people to come on Friday night? But when we say the Lord's Prayer, he jumps up and holds hands and he says the Lord. Doesn't offend the rabbi, just offends somebody who went to shul once last year or something. And I think we're trying to please too many people with too many things. And it gets back to that singleness of purpose. Our singleness of purpose is what makes, as I said the other night, there's nothing in AA that's new. There's nothing in AA, no philosophy that isn't found elsewhere in other books, any kind of things. The only thing that made AA work was when that doctor told Bill Wilson, you know, you're trying to teach him religion. You're trying to teach him about God. Don't do that. Explain to them how you know how they feel and why they drink. And the first one he tried down was Dr. Bob, who stayed sober. And they went up and tried down Bill D., the second guy down there, third guy down, and he stayed sober. Because the whole transmission is breaking that outside wall of my case is different. You can philosophize and talk about it all day long, but it gets down to that. And I, Sandy asked the important question. Check your group. Are you moving away from God? But what's the solution if there is? You say, well, the group conscience. But some group consciences are voting to discontinue God. Some group consciences are just out of control. So it isn't just a matter of turning it over to a group conscience, because there's a philosophy afoot that just, as has been said before, alcoholics is impervious to the outside world, but we are vulnerable inside our own walls. That's what will destroy us if we're ever destroyed. You know, 1950, Bill and Bob, or late 1940s, they were trying to introduce the 12 traditions because they felt A was in the early 1940s, after the big crush of the Saturday Evening Post article, there's meetings everywhere. And then about 1944, they start getting letters in, our group is dissolved, we don't have a group anymore, don't send us any more literature. And they had all reasons for it. Bill tried to start the grapevine. He thought maybe that helped people stay together. It helped a little, not much. But a doctor in North Carolina sent an article in to the grapevine. He says, Bill, you ought to read this. And Bill was surprised to learn that just 100 years before, there had been a group almost like AA in operation, Saving Alcoholics, the only other group in history. And they were called the Washingtonians. And through ways of one-to-one, after 5 years, they had almost 100,000 members in America. And at that time, their leaders got together and thought, maybe we're keeping our light under a bushel. Maybe we should help more people. Maybe we should not just help drunkards. Maybe we should help addicts, not heroin and cocaine like today, but laudanum and opium. And maybe we should get involved in politics and see if we can help stop slavery and see if we can get Texas in the Union, all sorts of good things. And they all went full blast. And by 1848, the entire group was extinct. Most of them died drunk on the streets. I had a book written by one of the survivors some years ago in which he said, we were doing so well. But after a while, people just didn't have time to talk to drunks. They just wanted to go help other people. And Bill saw that and read the reasons why they dissolved and realized, my God, these are the same reasons I'm getting in from around the country. So in a desperate effort to save AA in 1945, he sat down and wrote the 12 traditions. They didn't come when the book came. They came thousands of lives later. And he introduced them one by one in the long form in the grapevine. And Alcoholics Anonymous had one problem then that we have now that's very hard to overcome. It's full of alcoholics. And a lot of them said, we don't want any rules! We're here to find love! Yeah. Damn you. And so Bill may have read about it. He jumped into his motorcycle, put his wife in the sidecar, drove around the East Coast, tried to explain to groups why they're doing this. But they didn't really get to it because they were going down all over. So they finally decided to have a meeting. If we just get some people from around the country who understand, we'll get some people from Los Angeles, because they had Los Angeles AA since 1939, and Chicago, and Miami, and Toronto, and New York, and Boston. And it's a funny thing. As much as we like to think of those people as wonderful, they were humans. The people in Akron didn't like the people in New York, the AAs. And people in New York didn't like the people in Akron. And so they still don't. I live in Los Angeles. I don't like either one of them. But you know, the Oxford group was still strong in the Akron area, and New York was more at a cutting edge. But so they said to them, let's have a meeting somewhere. And the people in Africa said, we won't go to New York. And the people in New York, not to be outdone in spirituality, said, we won't go to Akron. So Bill and Dr. Bob Bears got along well.
Thank you.
Cleveland. Okay. Well, I'll go to Cleveland. So in 1950, they had was supposed to be the only meeting of worldwide alcohol or nationwide Alcoholics Anonymous. And they met there. And the primary purpose was to convince the membership to accept the 12 traditions. But it was significant for another reason, because Dr. Bob was dying of cancer at that time, on his last legs, really. And so he and Bill were supposed to speak. And they said, you probably can't talk, Bob. You're so sick and old, you know. He said, oh, I've got to talk. I'm 15 years sober. I'm the second oldest sobriety in the world. He said, and he was always a better 12-stepper than Bill Wilson was. He was a goer, boy. So that day, I had tapes home at that convention. His son on one side and an old guy on the other side brings this tall, gaunt, dying man to the podium. He said, I'm glad to have you here. I hope you'll go back and just talk, you know. I hope you go back and tell the boys and girls in your group what we're doing here, that you get out of AA pretty much what you put into it. He said, I want to apologize for my health. I've been bedridden the past few months. I haven't recovered the way I thought I would. I'm glad as I look over this hall to see some small thing I did 15 years ago helped bring us up. I just, you know, just talk. But then, he said, there are two or three things I'd like to talk to you about, because he knew this was a dying testament. And he said, first, let us remember to keep our program simple. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes, which may be of interest to the scientific mind, but has nothing to do with our work here. Our work here, when reduced to the last, consists of love and service. And we all know what love is, and we all know what service is. And secondly, he said, let us guard that erring member, the tongue, and try to use it with kindness and understanding. And there isn't a person in any room like this in the world who doesn't know exactly what he's talking about. We're all wonderful when things are going our way. It's wonderful. Just, another miracle today. Just, but let somebody hurt our feelings or say something bad about us. One of the amusing things about that is most of us have spent some time fighting the label alcoholic before we get here. I'm not an alcoholic. And after we're here a while, the worst thing you can say about anyone, I don't even think he's alcoholic. Kiss him, Dad. And finally he said, none of us would be here today if someone hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to maybe give us a pat on the back when we needed it, to take us to a few meetings. He said, let's never reach that stage of smug complacency where we are too busy to help our fellow man who suffers in the blackness of alcoholic despair. And he sat down, was dead shortly thereafter. And later on at that same convention, six young guys got up. I don't know who they were, but they, on the tapes, you just hear their tails wagging. They were exciting. They took the two forms of the, they took the, each two traditions in the long form and explained they were not rules. We had no way to enforce them. They were designed for the saving of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of us think maybe they were not as thorough as they might have been. In my part of the where I live, I have unjustly been accused of being trying to be a dictator, of telling people what to do instead of sharing. That's what Chuck always used to say. He said, how do you keep telling people what to do? I said, that's the spiritual way we do it, Chuck. And, well, you know, people don't realize you cannot be a dictator-type sponsor, because all it takes is the dictatee to say, screw you, and the dictatorship is over. That's the end. I always thought it'd be nice if we had people who could come at night and say, did you say screw you to your sponsor? Come with us to the camp. But that day, I'll tell you something funny, because What makes AA so wonderful is made up of fallible human beings. Bill Wilson still wasn't sure, I'm sure, that you'd get a vote for the traditions. Right? And he got done. He said, "Well, we've heard the traditions read. Seeing no objections, we accept them." By such means, we have found our spiritual path. Because the hardest thing to remember here, sometimes I feel less than because I have not reached the spiritual growth that many people have. I hear people who talk much more wisely about spirituality and how close they are to God. And I pray every night sincerely, and I pray every morning, and I hope God hears my prayers, and I hope He understands that I'm when my babies die, and I've had a few of them die, this sounds terrible, but I tell them, I say, "When you see Chuck Chamberlain, tell him I'm doing better than I really am." And I thought, what a terrible, bad taste. But several people told me later that. The guy's wife said it changed his whole approach to life, is to death. Instead of looking at a black hole, he's going to go report to Chuck Chamberlain. You know, to cheer him up. But none of us, no matter how hard we work the program, or what we try to do, how much we try to help to observe the steps to change our lives, you never rise above human being. And human beings are fallible, and they're emotional. And I heard a guy say one time, he said, "I've given up any hope that AA can make me emotionally mature, but by God has taught me how to act in public." Which is closer to the truth than we'd like to think. So, these gentlemen have posed deep spiritual questions. I have no answer for them, but I know this, that we are all flawed people, and we all have to keep trying. You just have to keep up. When fate knocks you on your can, you have to get up. Got a good punch there. I'll try to watch out for it next time. Stay out of situations that you know are going to be bad for you. Stay out of deals where it's going to screw you up. That's why they said don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. There's nothing wrong with those emotions, except they change your perception of reality. When you're hungry, you'll notice people around you become more stupid. Hurry up! When you're angry, sometimes it seems as though God just wants you to kill them for their own good. When you are lonely, you know they're all having a party somewhere, but they didn't tell you, did they? When you're tired, they actually attack. I went to the 1970 International Convention. They asked me to participate in that convention. I came home. I was so thrilled. Chuck Chamberlain was the last speaker tonight. I have spoken, and I gave him a little talk, but I was so thrilled. And I thought, up till that time, I would never hold hands to say the Lord's Prayer. So that's some Brentwood custom by those sissies over there holding hands. But I thought, I'm going to get over that. No more fighting, no more objecting. I'm going to live this better life. I'm going to get on the freeway. I'm going to be a better person. And first day I went downtown, I had my rear view mirror set so I could see the road, but just a little of me, too, just because I'd never seen it. I'd never seen myself in a state of spiritual perfection before. And I was very tired, but I know how to disguise that. I don't even look tired. I can. And some little lady at the last year, I think, Boulevard spotted me. I just hear her think, "See that guy in the blue Buick? He's exhausted. I'm going to cut that son of a bitch off." But what AA helped me do, I no longer chase people past my exit. If I haven't caught them by my exit, we say, "Good flying, Red Baron, we'll be together." And the trouble is, when you do catch them, you can't do anything. You can't cut them off. All you do is give them a ray, good, but you do. few years ago, a little girl cut me off and I was turning on the Harbor Freeway. I just missed dying by 2 inches. I'll tell you, it was in my heart. And I thought, I'm going to make an exception for her. I followed her past my exit. Up to the Santa Monica, the Pasadena Freeway. I got next to her. I gave her a quadruple ray. And I said, she's about 17 years old, had long silk golden hair. I thought, what kind of an old Grinch am I? She's like my granddaughter, Katie. I thought, isn't this terrible? What's the matter with me? And I smiled. And she went... You just got to stay out of situations like that. But I'm very pleased to be here this weekend. I very much enjoyed what these two gentlemen said. I have a great deal of respect for their knowledge and their dedication to the program. I am glad that even I, with my fallibilities and false behavior sometimes, But I found a comfortable way to live with these 12 steps. And I've lived very comfortably for 52 years. I very much appreciate it. And I hope we will all continue to do as well as we can. Thank you.